Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to SFF Yeah, a podcast dedicated to all things science fiction and fantasy. This is episode 138, and we are recording on September 16th. I'm Jen Northington, here with Sharifa Williams, and today we are talking about August Kitko and the Mechas from Space. I can't not do the space voice by Alex White for a book club episode. We'll also talk about news as usual.
I like your space.
You kind of have to, right? Like, there's like 14 A's in space.
There are.
It's required. But it's been a minute since we did a book club episode.
Yeah, I was excited to get back into reading a book together. And this one sounded super exciting. And I fortunately already had it in my Libro library.
Yeah.
So I was like ready to go.
Nice. That's exciting. Yeah, we're going to dive into like why we picked this one,
yes,
how it happened, all of those good juicy details in the second half of this show. But before that, we'll do news. And before even that, we will hear about a sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Okay, I am going to start us off with, it's awards season, y'all.
Yes.
Like, it is not just in sci-fi, it's happening all across literature. But I'm going to kick us off with just mentioning, this will be a short one for me anyway, that the 2022 Hugo Awards have been awarded. We have our list of winners. There is a link to Tor.com's roundup of them in the show notes. This is going to be short for me because I have some mixed feelings about this year's winners, and I don't feel like it's chill to call out any specific ones because that's not nice. So I'm just going to highlight one in particular that I was really excited to see, which is that, it's a lot of scrolling. Here we go. The Astounding Award for Best New Writer, which is technically not a Hugo, but is like awarded at the same time as the Hugo, so it's always in these lists, is that Shelley Parker Chan won for her first year of eligibility, and I am obsessed with that book. So I was really excited to see that Parker Chan got the winner. I mean, that was a great category. You know, Tracy Dion was in there, Micaiah Johnson, Zarin J. Zhao, Everett Maxwell, A.K. Larkwood, like a really great pool. And I just am particularly excited for Parker Chan.
I have been seeing that book everywhere.
Oh, Sharifa, it's so good.
I bet it is. I've heard great things about it, so I'm excited about that too. I also have some mixed feelings I won't get into. I don't know if they're the same feelings you have, but I will say also for me, like seeing N.K. Jemisin all the time is amazing.
Yes.
Like just in best graphic story or comic, that category this year, and Jemisin won for Far Sector, which had art by Jamal Campbell. So I was like, of course N.K. Jemisin's on this list.
Right.
Of course.
It's like, is there a Hugo category N.K. Jemisin has not won an award in? Like, I'm sure there are, but like, there's not a lot of
only
them.
For now. I think only for
yeah,
now.
Exactly. That's right. So, but yeah, anyway, you can take a look at the list, have your own feelings. It's cool.
Yes. Well, I will get into, I guess that both of mine feel a little bit short, but I have a feeling I am going to wax on about this one in particular. Harper's Bazaar reported, Quincy Legardi actually reported, collected a bunch of the best Twitter reactions to the new Little Mermaid teaser. And I have been legit seeing Little Mermaid reactions everywhere, and it's been giving me so much joy. So this is the live action adaptation of the Little Mermaid starring Halle Bailey as Ariel. And I feel like the news of this has been like the casting news, it feels like came out 5 years ago. I know that's not actually the case, but it feels like it came out ages ago. So I was really excited to see the first teaser. So it's a 2-minute teaser. And a lot of it is just sort of like getting you into the feel of, you know, those parallels between the iconic scene in Disney's animated The Little Mermaid and kind of having a very similar parallel in this live action version. And then you see Halle Bailey at the end in all her fabulousness singing beautifully Part of Your World. And you only get like a snippet of it, so you just get like a little taste, but it's so good. I got chills, so it was great to celebrate that moment by reading these tweets of predominantly Black people just like having like out of body experiences watching Halle Bailey as Ariel. I've seen all over Instagram like the memes I'm sure people have seen, like just having their kids, their little Black kids watching the teaser trailer and just being like blown away. So I just thought that this is a moment of like joy and happiness. And as somebody who had the Little Mermaid piano book and was obsessed with this movie, it is just like it speaks to my soul.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I have to confess, The Little Mermaid has never been like my movie. Do you know what I
That's
mean?
Okay.
Like,
That's...
yeah, it's okay. Sleeping Beauty and Beauty and the Beast were the ones that,
oh,
like,
yeah,
you know, were of my soul. I liked The Little Mermaid, and we definitely had, I remember like being on the playground and like people having like competitions to see how long you could hold that last like part of your world note, right? Like, that's a
that
thing
was
that
a
happened.
Thing.
That was a thing. And so I have like fond memories, but I was just like, whatever. Like, some of these live action movies have not been my favorite. So
yeah.
But I am 1000% sold by that teaser. I'm not going to lie. I watched it just to prep for the show. I was like, yeah, whatever. And now I got chills. I was just blown away by the look and feel of it. And Halle Bailey, who I'm going to have to try so hard not to call her Halle Berry.
I know.
Like, it's so
hard.
Close. It's so close. The sounds are exactly the same. It's just consonants that are different, but I'm going to do it. Halle Bailey. Oh, also the fact that Halle Berry was tweeting about Halle Bailey
is
a beautiful moment in this article. But so Halle Bailey, her voice. Oh my God. Like, that is, whoo. It's real. It's really, I don't care how you feel about the Little Mermaid. Y'all should watch this trailer because
yes,
it is a thing of great beauty. And yes, obviously, like, this means so much. Clearly, this means so much to so many folks. And it's really awesome to see everybody get to have that moment, right? Like, that just sheer, like, joy and delight moment. It's really exciting. So I am just, I, like, suddenly care about this in a way that I was not expecting to. And I even looked up the cast. I was like, who did they cast as Prince Eric? Like, let me see, you know, some of this other stuff. And I didn't know any of the, I mean, like, I just glanced at it, but I'm definitely going to be paying more attention, and I'm excited for the music that's going to come out of this. Like, Bailey's voice is really stunning. So I also discovered by falling down this rabbit hole that she's got like music out there. Like, she's a singer for
Oh, yeah.
So I definitely need to go listen to some of that now as well.
What, Jen, you weren't on the TikTok trend in the beginning of the pandemic where everybody was choreographing around that one song by the Bailey Sisters?
Y'all know, I know. My brain and TikTok do not cooperate with each other, but I'm late to this party, but I'm here now.
It's awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah. Right. It's my turn. Okay. So speaking of like moments of joy and excitement, especially for the Black community, Dragon Con got the full treatment in the New York Times, got a deep dive looking at how it is redefining what nerd culture looks like. This piece was written by Eden Weingart. And y'all, first of all, like the pictures alone,
yes.
Like just go, like whether or not you want to read this deep dive into Dragon Con, which is Atlanta's sci-fi gaming con. It's like it has video games, it has anime, it has comics, it does all of the things. Whether or not you want to read the whole profile, you should check out these pictures because the cosplay is so good. I mean, people go all out. And this was new to me, the remixing of characters.
Yeah.
Like, There's a mashup of LL Cool J and Eleven from Stranger Things. Like, what? That's genius. Like, it's super fun just to see how creative and like talented these cosplayers are. But the article really goes into how this con specifically made a real effort not only to reach out to different sections of the fandom. Like, it's not just video games, it's not just anime, it's not just comics, you know, it's not just Marvel, like it's all of these things. And you can really see that in the photos, like the range of fandom is so broad. But also they were like, diversity is important and we're gonna make it important.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did that thing. Like, they put in the work, they did the thing, and the like Black nerd community in particular is really highlighted in just glorious ways. So I thought this piece was so much fun to look at and read. Like, I will never be as good as God cosplay as any of these people. Like, not even close. But they inspire me to want to, like, think about it more. And I don't know. This article was just really lovely to see because, you know, we talk a lot about what nerd culture is looking like and how it's, you know, two steps forward, one step back, or sometimes one step forward, two steps back. So it's nice to see this celebration of inclusivity in all of these different ways.
I'm so glad you found this for multiple reasons, because I have always wanted to go to Dragon Con, but I am not a travel somewhere else, like travel across the country to go to a convention type of person. But now I live so close to Atlanta, I'm like, I totally forgot that this is a thing that is accessible to me now. And I had no idea about like the history of how it is a gathering space for Black nerds and like seeing all the outfits. I just pulled out my sewing machine again after a long, long time. And I'm like, okay, this is like super inspiring. This is making me feel like, you know, I can... Yeah, not just some tote bags and things, but like start thinking about making some costumes again. And I really hope that next year I am in a place of comfort about going to conventions again, because I would love to do this. And this just like lit the fire.
Yeah. There's an amazing Storm cosplay that involves a clear mask that I was like, oh, that's so good. Like, that's so genius. I've seen some of the pictures from your costume creations from past years. So, like, I'm living for this for you. Like, I can't wait to see what you come up with if you do get to go. It just is really, it's really glorious.
It is. This is so fantastic. I encourage everybody to look at those pictures and be similarly inspired.
Yes.
Well, I guess I will end us with this really random bit of Game of Thronesian / Duolingo news that I never expected to see. So Duolingo is a platform where you can basically learn different languages. I have used it on and off when I thought that I was going to become successful at learning a new language during the pandemic, especially. I have tried many a time. And so this, there was an update posted by the Duolingo team that a high Valerian course is coming to Duolingo. And I legit thought that this was a joke post at first. Because I was
it's been there. They have updated it.
Yeah.
Like
that's
this is actually It's like they're just like, oh, we added new words.
Yeah, yeah. So the original, I missed this when it originally came out in July. That was when they announced it. And then yeah, so it's already there. It's already available for anybody to learn High Valerian. And I was just I'm always fascinated by the creation of languages, which I learned from this post, some of these languages created in these science fiction, fantasy, et cetera, novels is like High Valerian is known as a conlang or constructed language. I did not know that was the thing, but it is a language specifically intentionally created by somebody versus a language that emerges naturally without a single creator. Like, you know, most of the languages we know. But I learned a lot about, like, created and imagined languages. And it also just baffles me that somebody is able to do this. It just seems like an impossible task. But I know it has been done a few times in, you know, the type of fiction we tend to gravitate towards, speculative fiction. So I was just like, this tickled my funny bone because I love language as bad as I am at learning new ones. Yes. And I will never learn High Valerian. That's not how I want to spend my time. But I think it's great that it is available for people to learn. And I thought it was fascinating.
Yeah, so a couple of things. I have had a similar journey with Duolingo. I'm like, I'm gonna learn a new language.
Yeah.
Or I'm gonna brush up on my old, you know, Spanish or whatever, my very rudimentary Spanish, and then I don't do it. I don't know. But in this case in particular, so Duolingo has also had like Klingon. I'm pretty sure, for example, like they've had conlangs on there for a while, which I think is really clever, honestly, because the groups of people who want to learn like Spanish or French or like, you know, Gaelic is one thing, and then the groups of people who want to learn Klingon or High Valyrian or whatever is another. And it is genius business to go after both of those demographics because they are not necessarily the same, right? Like, that's genius, I think, on their part. I have also met David J. Peterson, who was the creator, so he was the con linguist for High Valerian. He's also worked on, like, Doctor Strange, Penny Dreadful, and Dune, which I didn't know. But I met him because he published, like, I can't remember who it was with. Gosh, it was a legit, like, you know, learn a language publisher, though. They did a book for High Valerian. So, like, if you didn't want to do the Duolingo, like, you could get this book. And he was on events, and I was working at the bookstore. So we did an event, and he, like, came and talked about, like, the process of constructing a language, and this one in particular, and what it was like to be involved with Game of Thrones. And he is, like, a delightful human. We had a good time.
That's always good.
And it is.
Hear.
It's just fascinating to think about, like, how like, question marks forever, how. And, you know, like you said, like, it's not unusual in sci-fi fantasy to invent at least parts of a language. I mean, like, Tolkien is, you know, one of the main references that people use, and like, my mom taught herself Elvish, like, as a kid, like, out of the backs of the indexes. Isn't that adorable, right? Like, I come from a long line of geeks. So this isn't a new phenomenon, but the ways you can do it, like, through an app like Duolingo that also teaches real world, like, languages is fascinating. It's just fascinating. The whole thing is fascinating. So yeah, I always love to think about this, and they like this piece on the Duolingo site goes into a bunch of fun, you know, background and details, and then more specifically about High Valyrian. So if this is like the kind of nerd that you are,
yeah,
or even if you're just curious about it, like click on that link. It's real interesting. It's really, really interesting.
So cool. So cool.
Yeah, it's fun. Good times. All right. Well, that concludes our news. Let's hear from another sponsor and then we'll get into our book club. Okay. So I feel like I should start with how we ended up choosing this.
Yes.
Because it was not our normal process. Usually what we do is like we make a whole plan, we like identify like three or four titles, we poll you, our listeners, and then we announce it. And that didn't happen this time. What happened instead was I started reading this book earlier in the summer, and especially because I think I talked about this too, because it was in my most anticipated. Yeah. I was fresh off of like a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Like I read all of the books in that series. And then I ended up picking this up and I was like, this is the perfect summer book club. Like, Sharifa, let's do it. And you were very kind. And you were like, okay.
I was excited by how excited you were for this book.
I was really excited. And some of the reasons I was excited were because, you know, I have struggled this year with reading. And it was so, like, it just really grabbed me right from the jump, which has not happened to me a whole lot this year. I mean, it has, but not a whole lot. And I have read some of White's previous books, including from the Salvagers series. So I had, like, I thought I knew what I was going to get out of this, and I was mostly correct, because White does have, like, a signature style. And I liked that style. So I was like, oh. And it just felt like a good summer read. Like, it's a space opera. It's adventure-y. It's hijinks-y. It's very queer. Like, it had all of these things going for it. And I was like, let's just do it.
Yeah.
So that's how we came to like bypass all of the normal ways in which we pick a book club. So it's my fault if you didn't like it. They're just putting that out there.
I was delighted. I honestly get that. It's also been a hard reading year for me as well. And it was nice. Like, I was also very ready to have somebody else decide on a book title, because I know I would just, like, I've been falling into the same types of book recently. Like, yeah. That's been my sort of, my go-to, and I needed to be shaken out of just reading the same types of book. So this was such a nice, refreshing departure from what I've been reading, and it was so much fun. I am so glad you chose this title. So
yay! Glad. So let's do a synopsis of the book. You, like Sharifa, put together this whole beautiful outline. So we're actually going to be organized in this discussion. It's like, which has never happened before in the history of SF.
I'm knocking on wood, just in case.
Yeah, that's right. So it takes place in this, like, you know, future of our world, where it like starts on what is expected to be the last night of humanity. Like, there are these AI mecha giant space robots who have been decimating the human population across the galaxy. Like, lots of planets have already been destroyed. Like, Earth is last on the list. And everybody's expecting to die, like literally expecting to die. Oh, right. Content warnings for suicidal ideation, trauma, and PTSD, on the page violence. I think that's all of them. Does that sound right?
I think that's, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So, like, on the last night, you know, our main character, August Kitko, who is a jazz musician, jazz pianist, who has struggled with depression his whole life, is like standing on a balcony thinking about, like, you know, basically whether or not to hasten the dying process. Like, do you wait for the robots, or like, do you take matters into your own hands? Which is a pretty intense start, not gonna lie. And then, you know, the choice gets, you know, the choice is no longer a choice. Things start to happen and August gets swept up in this whole giant space adventure situation. He is in a romantic relationship with Ardent Violet, who is like a mega pop superstar, very talented, gender fluid character. Who is just like a force.
Yeah.
And the two of them end up getting like in communication with some of the mechas who have decided like, actually, we're not gonna destroy Earth, maybe. But it takes the whole book to find out why and
yes.
what is going on. This is the first in a series. So it's not like a tidy ending, right? Like,
no, it's very cliffhangery. And I don't think, yeah. I never check anymore if something is part of a series. So I was, right. I did not know it was part
sorry.
Of
it. Sorry.
And then I was like, what? It's my own fault. I just never check. But yeah, definitely a cliffhanger ending where you're like, but what's going to happen next? So.
Right.
Yeah. And I listened to the audiobook for this, which I wanted for anybody else who loves an audiobook. I thought it was really great. It's read by Hayden Bishop, who is a non-binary narrator who did a fantastic job and has narrated a bunch of other things. But I really enjoyed listening to the audiobook because there are so many great characters in this.
Yeah.
And to have them all sort of like realized by different voices, and I don't know, especially with some of the particular characters, I was just like, this is the perfect way to have this experience for me. It was very immersive.
Yeah, that's great. I wish I audioed. I think this would be an interesting book too, because it really is an ensemble cast, which I think is one of its strongest points. Like you're only ever in Gus or Arden's POV, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
But they are very intertwined with a bunch of characters, a lot of whom are fellow musicians. The music stuff in this book, like if there was ever a book begging for a soundtrack, like this is it.
Yeah, we were talking about this, I think also in our most anticipated, about how it seemed like there were quite a few
yes.
music-related SFF books out recently. And I was, for the audiobook of The Ballad of Perilous Graves, they had an original score. And I was like, I want this one to have an original
yes.
score too. Absolutely. I think that would be perfect for this
yeah.
book.
Right, because the actual way that the humans and the mechas end up cooperating to fight involves music, and it's so detailedly described. I like absolutely want to hear what that sounds, because every single one of these musicians has a different style, right? Like
yes.
Gus is a jazz pianist who does like experimental jazz, like
yeah.
not like Muzak jazz, like highly experimental. And then Ardent is like a pop star. And then we meet Hjalmar, I think is how you say
Hjalmar,
that, who is like a death metal,
yeah.
you know, a drummer. And then Nisha, who is a vocalist of Indian heritage and has like, you know, that like kind of music as her background. So they all have to like work together at a certain point and like meld their musical styles. And it's a real journey. And I was like, yeah, I want to hear what that sounds like. Like I'm dying to hear what that sounds like.
I would love, I'm about to get into some spoilery stuff.
Okay.
So
okay.
I just wanted to let everybody out there know.
Yeah.
But there was that one scene, speaking of the music and like the key component of the music being integral to making sure the human conduits and the traitor vanguards can work together. And there was that one scene later on in the book where they are literally in the studio trying to
yes.
learn to work together. And I had a distinct experience of trying to imagine
right.
what this all sounded like together with like the Bhangra and the death metal and the pop
yeah.
and the jazz. And I was like, my brain hurts. Like I can't fathom what this is like. But I loved that scene because I'm a sucker for like the bands get in together and they're going to the studio. And like the story really leaned into that moment. And it reminded me of some of my favorite scenes from other media all over the place that are just like that. And it just like satisfied that music loving part of me. This has to be a, I feel like every music lover and sci-fi lover out there has to read this book. So good.
It was interesting. I was poking around in reviews for the book and some people were really like, there's a lot of music stuff in here. Like, what? Not like they like they were not into it.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I guess if you are like not, I don't even know how to say it. Like, I get, like, I have played a couple different instruments. So, like, maybe, but that doesn't mean that I know all the terms or the references or, like, I don't know what these chords sound like. Like, they reference all kinds of chords. I don't know what it sounds like, but I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter to me. But I guess if you are a reader who does want to, like, have an anchor point for these kinds of things, it could get frustrating. I get, I'm like trying to see it from that POV. I was just like, yeah, tell me more about like weird chord progressions. Like, I don't care if I know or don't know what that sounds like. I want to know what it sounds like, but I don't care if I don't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think it's funny, like when you mention that, I immediately think about, you know, Gus is almost like in like described in some parts as almost insufferably into like the sort of academic music. Like he's a musician's musician, I think is how he's described. And but even with that, like, yeah, I didn't have moments where it felt like Gus was really like, he didn't go into long soliloquies about music and the importance of music and all the different like the ways that, you know, specifically things about the music drive the Meccas or the Trader Vanguards. But it is just like, it's just, you know, music. Music is the whole driving force between behind how this sort of AI Mecca situation is set up in the story. It's like the whole, it's part of the backbone of the story. So. Right. I guess if you don't like music, then you don't want to get into it.
You might want to skip it. Yeah. There are so many characters, and you have some good notes here about, do you want to talk about our favorite characters?
Yeah. Well, I honestly really, I also enjoyed that this was an ensemble and that there were so many characters to love and get to know. But for some reason, the pairing of Hjalmar, the death metal drummer, and Nisha, the Bhangra singer, was like, they're two very contrasting personalities, just made me like laugh and delighted me. And I think it was especially because when they're introduced, it's when the book is starting to get darker, like we're learning about the real consequences of being a human conduit, and Gus is like really thinking about the bleak outlook for his long-term future and also for Ardent's long-term future. And so we have these really, really dark moments where it feels like we're getting to a place where it's just like pure crisis and you don't know who's going to come out victorious. And then you have Hjalmar and Nisha as sort of like this comedy duo lightening things up here and there. Nisha like telling Hjalmar off and doing her own thing and being a super fan over Ardent. Like, I needed that, I think, in those moments, because those moments were also necessary, the dark bits, but I needed a little bit of something to shake me out of the darkness.
Yeah, you're so right. You're so right. I loved them too. They are an odd couple pairing that is just like fantastic. And the way that Nisha is really like not impressed with Gus crying.
Yeah.
Just like, okay, like, cool that you're here. Like, and it's a little bit jarring for Gus because, you know, he's been like the military is like in touch with him and like he feels like he's got the weight of the universe on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, some other people have done the same thing that you're doing. And like, hi, like, what's up? it's really delightful. I agree. Although that being said, Gus really did tug on my heartstrings in a lot of ways. I was very, and Dahlia, who is Arden's manager, I think is really the unsung hero. Like, Dahlia is incredible. I loved all of her screen time, quite frankly, and the way that she is so unafraid to real talk, you know, whether it's Arden or like somebody else, but then also like, yeah, make the things happen at great risk to herself when she understands, like, the reasons. Oh, Dahlia's fantastic. Fantastic.
Once you put Dahlia down, I was like, that was a great choice because throughout the story, I was like, oh my goodness, I feel for Dahlia. Like, this is such a tough place to be. And, like, not only managing a personality like Arden, but also in this sort of end of the world scenario, being asked to do the most to just like keep her client alive and safe and well. Like, the thing I was glad for when we got to that cliffhanger ending was that I was very concerned about what happened to Dahlia. And I was like, okay, maybe it's going to be explored in the next book. It's not just like she was whisked off into space and, you know, we don't know if she's okay or not, because she was like an amazing character who had to endure a lot.
Yes, yes, 100%, 100%. So clearly there's a lot of things that we liked about this book. And Sharif, you kind of touched earlier on the balance between the hijinks and like the serious crisis moments.
Yeah.
And I just, I do feel like we're seeing more of these stories. Like, I think Light from Uncommon Stars by Rika Aoki is another great example of like how you can take trauma and take it seriously, but still write a book that is joyful and fun. And like, that's not, I don't think that's easy to do. And I think that's why it's not that common to see. And I really love that we're getting more of these stories.
I agree. There were some really, like, the moments when Gus was in battle. I think the moment that was like really dark was that I really hadn't seen realized so clearly, like the internal struggle was when Gus was in, you know, battling it out in Grimalkin and was literally getting crushed and physically just destroyed, and you get a sense of like the internal struggle that's happening and like what's gonna happen to me and like how am I going to be after all of this. And I was just like, it just like gripped my heart and squeezed it. But I'd also had like a lot of, there was a lot of nuance to it. There was a lot of nuance to the way that part, those parts of the stories were approached and explored. So I appreciated that as well. And I also just appreciated, like, I this is the, I think, second Mecca story I have read this year, if I know what year I'm in. Yes. And I'm really enjoying the different ways Mecca stories are being told, where it's like, you know, you have a human conduit or a human pilot of some sort, and you have this behemoth of a thing that is being driven or propelled. And I just love the different ways these stories are being told. And with this one, the idea of these Meccas being kind of the fallout of human meddling in AI technology and not knowing how to deal with or dealing with poorly AI sentience. And mm-hmm. I feel like especially these days, I've been seeing a lot of, I'm not putting on my tinfoil hat here, but I've been seeing a lot of like, you know, headlines about a scientist being like, well, this was a sentient AI and everybody dealt with it wrong. And so I'm always curious to see how authors with great imaginations and thoughtful storytelling styles approach this. And I thought that this was one of the better ones I'd read so far.
Yeah, I'm super curious to see how that theme continues to get explored over the course of the series, right? Because it's not resolved
yet.
And it is very, I thought that was super interesting. I also thought it was really interesting to see a story about an apocalypse take a character's focus on aesthetics very seriously. Like, Like, I feel like in a lot of other stories I've read, someone like Ardent, who is extremely concerned with color, with fabric, with texture, with sensory input that is around them, like at any given moment, including moments of crisis, like if not extremely moments of crisis, the book, I think a lot of books would play that as a joke. Right.
Yeah.
Like would play that as like a funny haha, like look how ridiculous this character is. But like this book takes Arden's sensory input needs seriously. And I was just like, that's I don't know that I've seen that before. That was really interesting to me. And I think that's just one of the ways that this book like makes space for representations of different people's approaches to the world and like, you know, intense crisis moments and doesn't dictate one correct way to respond to them, which I appreciated.
That's a really, I hadn't thought about it that way, but that really rings true. I mean, I simply delighted in Ardent's entire like the aesthetic and the really clear and detailed descriptions of the outfits and the way they like to surround themselves with certain, you know, atmospheres. And I just delight as an extra person, I appreciated those moments and like wallowed in them a little. And was like, I love every, I wrote in the notes that I just want all of Ardent's outfits because they were just like the most. And,
yes.
But I hadn't really thought about it in that way, that it wasn't like portrayed in a sort of jokesy light and it, you know, like that sort of sensory approach and, way of interacting with the world is really important to a lot of different types of people. So I'm seeing that in a completely from a completely different perspective. But I thought that this was also, speaking of Ardent, like I just really love reading non-binary stories by non-binary people in science fiction and in all books, really. But seeing that representation here and just reading about Ardent as a character who honestly annoyed me a lot at times, but was just like a really, you know, layered, complex, nuanced character. Like, I just thought this was such a great example of why we need more queer non-binary books written by queer non-binary people. Like, I loved the way Ardent and Gus's relationship unfurled. Insta-love as it may be. Like,
yes.
I love...
But not insta-love that lasts. They go through the ringer.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. And Gus has so much, like, he just always seems like he thinks the worst is going to happen to him. So there are moments where I'm like, wait a second, are you going to self-sabotage here with this relationship that I am really enjoying? But the two of them being so in love and their, you know, romance being told on the page was like, it gave me a lot of good feelings and it tugged at my heartstrings. So,
yeah, yeah. So obviously we loved a lot of things about this book.
Yes.
There are some things we didn't love as much. So do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll get my sort of like complicated one out of the way first. And I want to say, like, I loved this book. And for everybody else who loved this book, please take this with all the grains of salt. But for my reading experience, personally, I did have a moment of like some vague bristling about Tazi, who's this really powerful figure in the military. She is basically the one who is trying to get Gus and Ardent to cooperate with their work around, you know, basically the end of the world and trying to save humankind. And the friction I felt initially was just because I was worried that Tazi, being the only Black woman character in the story who had any sort of significant role, would be like this very severe kind of different kind of angry Black woman. Because there isn't a lot of space, and this is perhaps me expressing that there isn't a lot of space in the world for Black women to be anything but this strong, like, not vulnerable figure. And so I had moments where I was just like, I was waiting for more Black characters to come up so that it wouldn't be so much about Tazi and this, like, very familiar, sort of severe, strong Black woman figure. And that didn't happen. But Tazi's character, eventually, toward the end, you learn about why she is so, like, unwavering in her resolve to really, like, you know, basically sacrifice whatever so that humankind as a whole can survive. But up until that moment, I was just, like, a little tense about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was just the one part of the reading experience that kind of pulled me out of the story and into my own head in a way I didn't necessarily enjoy. So that was
No, I think that's very fair. It's very true. It's one of the hard things is when you don't have a lot of representation of a particular type of character in the genre in general.
Yeah.
And then that gets replicated in one story, then that's hard. That's difficult.
Yeah. So that was my thing. What about you?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do agree that, like, occasionally, I don't know, actually, sometimes I got more frustrated with Gus than with Ardent. I really did love Ardent. I even said, like, specifically, I loved Ardent. Because you're right. Like, they are the most all the time forever, which is, you know, perfect for the character. But their relationship did, I occasionally was like, oh my gosh, like, just Gus, get out of your head. Like, get out of your head. Please get out of your head. Which is relatable, but, like, also, you know, occasionally you just have to yell at the characters in a book. That's just a thing that happens.
Yep.
In terms of storytelling, you know, obviously, like, I think you're right about Tazi's character, you know, riding a little close to this stereotype. And also the AI motivations got a little muddy for me. Like, Ardent's relationship with the Mecca that she ends up paired with, whose name I cannot remember.
Is it Faust something? I would remember maybe being, like, Faustian or something like that.
Yeah. It's a little unclear because, like, initially that Mecca is like, I don't care about humans. Mm-hmm. Like, why would I help? And it's sort of addressed, but sort of not in it, why it ends up, you know, actually participating in this fight to save humanity. And then when we meet the big bad, which is a great reveal.
Yeah.
But, like, the way that the end plays out, I was a little bit like, wait, what? Like, I got a little confused. about the motivations involved. So like but I think that's just, this was a really ambitious plot. And I don't think it's like, you know, a huge issue. It just, and it also, sometimes these things are because I read fast. I just like, I just plow through books. I don't go slowly. And there could have been cueing in there that I missed because I was just tearing through it. So this might just be a me problem. That is all I'm saying. But also, like, it's fine. Like, in the end, it doesn't really matter because I enjoyed it overall so much that, like, you know, what specific motivations were, you know, in play for this, you know, Vanguard versus this other one is like not ultimately that big of a deal.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean though, because I also felt like with Ardent's mecha in particular, I wasn't necessarily sure if there was going to be some other development. So I don't think that was just you, but I agree. Like, this is a super ambitious story. Grimalkin like gets a lot of the sort of responsibility of explaining the, you know, why they are helping humans out, and you don't get that as much with Ardent's mecha. They kind of come together later in the story, so that's tough. That's tough to deal with. And just to speak to my particular annoyance with, much as I love Gus and Ardent as a romantic couple, and I feel for them like I do for a bunch of messy 20-somethings. Like, I was like, oh my goodness. And I know I'm being completely uncharitable here, and I would be a hot mess if this was ever happening to me, and I'd be just as bad at it. But there were like moments where, you know, Gus was like, you know, I'm a musician, I need to get to my piano, and like, I'm going to risk all to get to my...
Yes.
Like, Gus, stop it. Stop it. I was like, okay, if this was a real world, you know, people will have their things and they need to, you know, get their jollies where they can because all the things are terrible. But I was so uncharitable toward Gus in that moment.
That's funny. That's funny. I love that. So yeah, on the whole, like a really fun and thought-provoking reading experience.
Yeah, this was like such a fun time. I'm finding that I really love these space opera, especially when music is involved. I'm really, I just want all the musically inclined science fiction and fantasy. I didn't realize how many different ways you could take music and turn it into such a big part of the story. But I just loved this book, and I can't promise I'm going to finish the series because I never do, but I'm so glad I read this first book.
Yay. Well, if y'all read along with us, you know where to send your emails. Or if you don't, it's sffia@bookriot.com. Send us your thoughts. We would love to hear them. Thanks for reading along with us. If you did, if you didn't, maybe consider it. I'm just saying. And yeah, at some point we'll do another book club. Who knows how it will play out.
Pick a book out of thin air.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see what we do next. All right. So SFFia is sound edited by Caitlin Brame. Many thanks to her for making us sound great each and every episode. If you want more recommendations, you can get those at bookriot.com. You can find our other podcasts at bookriot.com/listen. Again, email us sffia@bookriot.com. We always are happy to hear your thoughts about science fiction and fantasy. Get your pet pictures, et cetera, et cetera. And if you have a moment to review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Podchaser, wherever, it helps other folks to find the show. So please do that. And speaking of finding us, Sharifa, where can the people find you?
They can find me on Instagram at szainabwilliams. That's S-Z-A-I-N-A-B Williams.
And I am sometimes on social media, on Twitter and Tumblr as Jen IRL, J-E-N-N-I-R-L, or on Instagram as I am Jen IRL. And we will talk to you next time.